welcome. We are at the final session, and this is the ship owner's view. There's also seen the view from the top deck we've listed in the agenda. We've gathered some big global players on stage here today. I think what we are going to look at is how the world is seen from your end. I think we have a lot of different challenges to deal with. First, let's have just a quick round of introduction and before I go into my questioning. Lars, please.
Thank you. My name is Lars Barstad. I'm the CEO of Frontline. We're a large tanker owner, 81 tankers on the water, predominantly VLCC, but also Suezmax and Aframax LR2s. I guess stock listed in New York and in Oslo.
Thank you. John?
Hi, I'm John Lycouris. I'm Dorian LPG. We operate 25 very large gas carriers. We've been in business for 10 years. We're a public company in New York Stock Exchange. We have offices in Connecticut, New York, and offices in Denmark, Copenhagen, and in Greece and Singapore.
Lasse?
Lasse Kristoffersen. I'm the CEO of Wallenius Wilhelmsen. We're a global player in shipping logistics for autos and heavy equipment. We have a fleet of 130 vessels and terminals and people all over the world moving cars, excavators, harvesting machines, and big stuff that is hard to move.
Ernst?
Yeah, good afternoon. My name is Ernst Maier. I'm the CEO in Thorvald Klaveness. We are the majority shareholder of Klaveness Combination Carriers, stock listed here in Oslo. 16 combination carriers on water, three under construction. We also have a dry bulk operations with around 50 vessels on charter and a software department creating optimization for our cargo owner customers.
Well, hi, good afternoon. My name is Ibrahim. I'm the CEO of Asyad Shipping, part of Asyad Group in Oman. We are active in five main segments. That is tankers, product tankers, as well as dry bulk, LNG, and little bit of containers. We've been in business for the last just over 20 years, and as of today, we own and operate about 100 ships.
Thank you all. When we have heard about all the different discussions throughout the day, I think we can say that you guys are really at the heart of all the challenges. What we've also discussed earlier today is that most disruptions, it could be pandemic, trade wars, different, even the drought in the Panama Canal, has created earnings in shipping or for shipping. However, also now the recent geopolitical turmoil and the new world that is unwinding around us is creating a new uncertainty, a new element, and maybe also will set a new direction for how we are moving. When we talk about all of this, trade wars, tariff sanctions, and all the uncertainties that is growing exponentially, bringing a need to maybe adjust our strategies and the way we are conducting the business in the future. Where do you see the threats and opportunities for your company and the way you are operating? Maybe let's start on the opposite side with Dr. Ibrahim.
Well, I think the industry is at an inflection point as of today. We used to see like geopolitical conflicts, a lot of maybe the pandemics as well as maybe climate changes and these things. They used to cause maybe a spike, a short-term spike in terms of rates and earnings. However, that is not the case anymore because it's becoming especially the geopolitical conflicts, they're becoming deeper and longer. In the past, it used to just go within like a short period of time. Now it's becoming, unfortunately, it takes longer time to vanish. We've seen it in the last few years, over the last 3 years, where conflicts have just been sustainable. This is, of course, causing a lot of challenges. It's redefining the supply chain, the traditional supply chain. A lot of trade routes are being reconfigured. For us, the way we see it, Asyad Shipping, it's mainly the threat is the unpredictable uncertainties and as well as the changes in day-to-day decisions when it comes to the regulatory volatility. we wake up every morning, there's a new regulation coming. And that by itself is causing a lot of challenges. We are also unable, I mean, as when I speak about it, as an industry, to just think about what would be the best way forward. That uncertainty is causing us a lot of uncertainty, again, in terms of planning. It's also causing us a lot of, giving us a lot of headache, if I may say, in terms of defining the insurance profile. Today, the insurance risk profile keeps changing. Today, we are talking about the Red Sea, we are talking about the Black Sea, we are talking about different parts of the world that were not in the map of the risk in the past. So all of these things put together, of course, they come up with a lot of challenges saying that. And also, there are also some, I'm trying to be optimistic within the industry itself, there are also a lot of opportunities. Because we can see today with a lot of, especially when it comes to the green fuel, the energy transition, the global energy transition is given a lot of opportunities. There's also much more awareness in terms of the green cargo and the clean cargo, if I may say. So the consumers at the end of the day, they are also developing that sort of awareness. There's, I can say, also a potential growth in terms of collaboration between different stakeholders. I mean, this platform is one of them, where different ship owners and different stakeholders from the shipping industry sit and, of course, exchange thoughts with each other and try to learn from each other. So that by itself also is another opportunity that we can build upon.
I think that's a very good point, actually having these type of forums. And it might change now with the world looking a little bit different. Moving on to you then, Lars, threats and opportunities. Sometimes opportunities can be threats and sometimes threats can be opportunities. How do you see this in a changing world?
Now, kind of luckily, we find ourselves in some sort of a vacuum in this because hydrocarbons and oil needs to move. So it's actually quite comforting coming into the office every morning and fixing ships left, right, and center. But I think kind of in a wider term, you know, global polarization came in as a, like a fashion word about a year and a half ago. And that's a problem because the whole system for trading commodities or goods is kind of a finely tuned mechanism to the benefit of global growth. And that's now getting one way or another dismantled. So I'm actually quite skeptic to you know, kind of the pace of the how the world's going to develop going forward. And we all know that kind of a recession is not really good for any industry or economy. So I think kind of that's the biggest challenge here. Trying to figure out kind of how this the end game is going to be, I think, is a little bit of a waste of time because we don't know. We're living in a kind of a bit in a chaos. And then kind of trying to do the big strategic choices and discussions in this scenario is a little bit difficult.
So agility then is probably very important.
Yeah.
John?
Okay, well, I was thinking earlier, and I was talking with somebody, our main concern now is energy demand, is going to explode with AI becoming the mainstream kind of consumer of energy. And we're going to need a lot of energy. We're going to need probably all the fuels that we have until we kind of transition ourselves to the hydrogen economy. I think there's going to be huge demand for most of the fuels that we are using right now, and these mainly are transition fuels until we get to something improving. So I have seen that the demand for shipping, at least in our sectors, has been pretty steady and strengthening as time goes on. I mean, when we started as a company 10 years ago, there was hardly any LPG coming out of the Western world. It was only from the Middle East. Right now, it's the majority of that fuel comes from, you know, the United States, from the Americas. So it is quite impressive how things have changed. And how we have become very dependent on energy, and you know, LNG, LPG, and crude oils, I think, have become a very important part of our economies. I cannot see how we're going to move on until we have the next fuel of the future, and it looks like hydrogen might be it, but we have to wait and see.
Thank you. And Lasse, you have felt threats recently, but you still need to think long-term strategy. Your reflections, please.
Yeah, of course, and we are in the middle of all of these trade discussions. And I think, I mean, if we zoom out a little bit, we are facing now an unprecedented time. And we have said that many times before. I've said it before. I was wrong every time. This time, actually, I think I'm right. And that is because there are three fundamental tectonic shifts going on at the same time. One is, of course, the technology transformation that we're going through that drives also the trade tension. And we're going through an energy transformation. All these three things happening at the same time. And it creates new lines and new rule books. And it happens in a time where we had a global, call it rule book, written by the US. They have abandoned that. They are not policing it anymore. And we are looking for a new rule book. How do we set up trade? How can we build long-term supply chains? So what's happening right now when we meet with our customers, with the CEO and ourselves all over the world, is uncertainty. And uncertainty causes inaction and lack of investment. So in general, there's no doubt that when we're in shipping, although maybe hydrocarbons are on the better side of it, we live out of trade. And right now, the US is putting themselves outside world trade. Then, on the other side, we see other parts of trade that are developing very strongly, right? And we see China is growing fast in our segment, in autos, growing from less than 1 million cars a few years ago to more than 6 million cars of exports all over the world, showing that, yes, you can use this thinking that let's protect ourselves with tariffs, but eventually technology gravitates into all markets. So it will never be so that the US consumer will drive around in more expensive cars with poor technology because of tariffs. And the fact is that the Chinese and some others are leading on technology these days. So these are very much linked. I mean, technology, energy transition, and the trade conflict, these cannot be, you know, separated, but they're happening at the same time. And that's why we see inaction.
Thank you. Ernst, threats and opportunities. I know that you're also thinking long-term strategies, how to navigate.
Yeah, I think maybe long-term is the point there, because what we do not like are the man-made shocks that we have seen a few of over the latest years that make you end up on the right side or the wrong side of the lane. So in a moment, uneven playing fields are made, and it's just random if you are benefiting or losing on it. So you're left to coincidences. What is not a coincidence is to try to understand what the world needs more of and what's need less so. And that can be disturbed or influenced by trade wars and geopolitics in many senses. But we know that the world will need less carbon. That cannot be a surprise. We signed the Kyoto Protocol in 1996. The timing of it can be a risk or an opportunity, and I think that's where it matters the most. And that can be on not giving the world carbon or providing the world with alternatives to carbon on top of food and energy and minerals that we will always need.
Thank you. In this geopolitical turmoil, and we also see like some challenges in the economy, we see high new building prices, there are limited slots availabilities, and also gradually maybe longer time to have vessels. And this will, you know, investments in new ships makes this quite uncertain. And at the same time, we see an aging fleet getting older and older. So, and also we see investments needed in terms of the different regulations and different types of new equipment that needs to be on board. We know that the ships will gradually get older and older. So we need to look at these investments. And faced with this complexity, what is your strategy for future fleet renewals in a way that will both kind of satisfy the return of investments as well as regulatory compliance? And maybe I'll start now with you, John.
Well, we see that we need to move on with dual fuels, and of course we have done that. We have 10%, more than 20, actually almost 20% of our fleet is dual fuel, and we are moving towards renewing our fleet towards that end of into transition fuels. But also we are investing a lot in technical optimization and operational optimization, and also handling our crews in getting a little bit more attuned with the new technologies of what we have installed in our ships. So there's, it's a multifaceted approach to how we handle our fleet renewal with the crew, with technological improvements, and we kind of study whatever there is. Operationally, we need to improve the ships, and we think that we are managing well enough to maintain the ships going for well into the future right now. Of course, there has been no dramatic new technology that I can see that will make a big change from, you know, what we have right now. So we do need renewal of shipping, but we need the shipyards to be able to produce new types of ships that can handle the 30s, 2030s, and 2040s. These ships are just, you know, what we've known that is possible in the 2015s and 2020s, unfortunately. So we are trying to improve our ships and install a number of features, as many as possible, technologically viable, that we can install to be able to enable them to go to the future. So I know it costs money, but that's the way it has to happen. And if everybody does it, then it's, you know, level playing field.
Thank you. Lars, return of investments and fleet renewals, your thoughts?
No, you pointed to a very, very good point. You know, we're, well, particularly so in the tanker fleet, but also similarly in the dry bulk fleet. We're running one of the oldest fleets kind of on record. You need to get back to pre-2000 levels to find such an old tanker fleet servicing the global markets. And this is a paradox considering the regulatory framework we're supposed to align with. And then you have, you know, to kind of decarbonization and couple it with your investors' kind of interests. And I think that's where the problem is. You know, where the kind of quite a few pieces missing for a ship owner to make the CapEx investment it is and expect a return on the investment yet in kind of looking at alternative propulsion. So that's just going to delay this whole process. If you look at what's ordered in the yards, particularly for the bigger ships, continues to be conventional tankers, although eco and, you know, with all the kind of bits you need in order to try and reduce your emissions, it's still a conventional vessel. And that's not going to change until it's economically feasible to make these investments. It's almost not feasible to make an investment, you know, ignoring the regulatory environment we're in also. So I think it's a paradox, and it's a little bit sad kind of coming from a ship owner. But on the other hand, you know, if you look at the global scale, shipping is actually not worst in class. Since 2008, shipping altogether has kind of managed to reduce its emissions kind of per mile with 7%, whilst the rest of the world has increased emissions by 16-17%. Last time I checked with the ChatGPT. So it is, you know, shipping is actually moving in the right direction. But, you know, we're a small part of the global emissions problem, but we're actually doing a fairly good job.
Thank you. Ernst?
So short term is to invest at the right time when you believe in the future freight rates and the new building prices, which are very high at the moment. I think it's important to to realize that perhaps CapEx has been deflationary as long as we have lived, because shipbuilding has been moving into low-cost countries, and also equipment that's being manufacturing in low-cost countries, and now we are at the end of that world, or end of that road. So as the rest of the world, perhaps shipbuilding has become inflationary. So I wonder where the new bottom is. How cheap can a shipyard from China deliver a normal vessel? I'd be very interested in that number.
You and more, I think.
I think it's higher than it used to be, simply because of inflation. Another paradox I think we have is what is the economic lifetime of a ship? Because we are used to, at least for bulkers and tankers, we are used to around 25 years. But if you get HFO fuel ship delivered, say 2028, 29, which is when you will get it if you order it today, already in the mid-30s, you may have to do a midlife investment of $10, $20 million perhaps. And on top of that, you have to deal with the risk of getting access to less cargo in the 40s in terms of gasoline, petrol, all these products that we use to drive transportation. And coal is, I think, is around 30% of the dry bulk volume. So has to be kind of outweighed by other growth parameters, like we need more food, we need more energy and metals. So shipping will probably be a good place to be, but what is the new economic lifetime of a vessel? I think that's a key question to ask.
And maybe someone has reflections on that. Anyone there to, yeah?
Yeah, not necessarily on that one, but for us, for example, when you think about our new builds or fleet renewal, it's not just about replacing old assets or old tonnage. We see fleet renewal is also about asset flexibility and about future proofing. And the technology advancement, because nowadays the ships that we have, if they are more than 10 years old, then they are just a kind of outdated. As a matter of fact, even if we place an order for a shipyard today for a new build, and this is a problem that a lot of our ship owners face, we build these ships or we design their specification to be at the latest regulations, just to comply with the latest requirements. By the time the ship is delivered, she's already outdated. And then we have to retrofit and start thinking about the new technologies. That itself is a challenge. I think when we go for new builds, we should be looking with a dual lens, whether it's the compliance readiness is one. And I would also suggest maybe there's also the market adaptability. How adaptable that ship can be when she is delivered from the shipyard. And to do that, of course, we need to also think about when we build these ships, how do we stagger that investment? Whether we go for just bringing ships in and scrapping ships out, and what will happen to the technology gap in between getting a new ship and scrapping an old ship. That is a challenge because this is not done for free. It costs money. And for that reason, it's always important for ship owners to establish a good partnership with different stakeholders, like with classification societies, the like of DMV, for example. It's also with the shipyards when they build these ships, because a lot of the shipyards, they are also facing the same challenge because they cannot cope with the different changes in regulations. Nowadays, as said earlier, you know, we get up every morning, there's a new requirements. I hate to say this, but again, when it comes to the IMO, which is supposed to be looking after the interest of the ship owners, there's not so many ship owners sits there. And this is when the decision-making is done. It's done by people who are not directly involved in shipping. Yet, for the ship owners, we will have to bear the consequences, and we have to abide by the requirements, and eventually needs to be basically work with that regulation. It's regulations are important, but over-regulating is not safe for us, because eventually what's happening today, there are a lot of regulations that are already in the market that we need to comply with, and we are like halfway through when a new regulation comes again. And then we have to forget about the old one and start to a new race to comply with the new regulation. By the time we are like 20% or 30%, then a third new regulation coming. And the race just continues to go like this. And eventually, we end up like not 100% complying with all the requirements. It's just part 20% from this one, 10% from this regulation, 50% from the other one, and eventually we get lost. And this is what I call an over-regulating of the industry. We need to regulate the industry. That is a necessity that we all understand. But to what extent and how frequent do we need to look into these regulations? Shouldn't we just go back and think about, okay, the existing regulations, what are the good, the bad, and the ugly about this regulation, and let's fix the problems instead of creating a new problem with a new regulation.
Thank you for that. And I guess predictability here is a very important point.
If you allow me to throw in,
yes, sure.
Forget about predictability. Get used to it. Sorry. This is life. I mean, we're in the middle of a transition. We will have more and faster regulations going forward. And we have just seen the start of it. We have not really regulated the energy transition yet to the extent we need to. And we are, and I'm at least fully convinced, that the issues we see on climate change, it's not gone away. We have just started to forget it. It's going to hit us back. So if you struggle with regulations today, I mean, then you get in real trouble, because there will be more and they will be tougher, and they should. On this, and just wait until we see cybersecurity really hitting into our industry and as a new issue, right? I mean, where we have not really looked into protecting our operational assets to the extent that we should. So I think this is just a new normal and predictability. And as I said in my introduction, I think we are in a time now where the global rulebook is rewritten in so many areas that forget about predictability. This is about adaptability and the ability to actually navigate through this and create competitive advantage. And your question was, so what do you then do with your fleet strategy? It's tough, let's face it. Mm-hmm. But I think there are a couple of things that we at least believe in. One is that you need to constantly increase your competitiveness. We're maybe a bit different from the others here. We're a liner company. We are moving. Mercedes doesn't care about the vessels we buy. They just care how much does it cost for me to get a car into the US market. And we need to constantly drive that and cost. And we need to, in that process, make decarbonization available and affordable. And if you just transfer that cost of decarbonization to our customers, it will not happen. So we are very much thinking around three things when we think on fleet strategy. One, how can we become how can we be counter-cyclical without losing the product we have in the market? Mm-hmm. Two, how can we use every new building to improve our competitiveness, i.e. lower cost per transport work? And three, how will this new building make the energy transition more affordable? And we think so far we've been able to deliver on that, but we've just started on that journey.
Thank you for that. And building a little bit on what you said, Ernst, and all of the reflections here, we see now that then there are many expensive investments moving forward. Do we believe that we will also see increased earnings? Lush?
I'm not sure if I got that.
As the shipping, you know, we need more technology, we need new regulations, we need to add on, and the ships will...
I'll jump in, Lars, and say no. I mean, it's but I think, I mean, you comment as well, but the general thing is that we tend in shipping to have a link between the capex of what you build a vessel for and what you need to earn as a minimum, and that should be the floor. Never been like that. It's a supply demand at the time of a vessel is entering the market. So the question is whether you will own the vessel or you go bankrupt or somebody else buy the vessel. But there's no link between capex and charter rates. I mean, that's unless you do long-term charters for dedicated trades. I mean, that's but I hope you don't think you disagree.
No, I do not disagree at all. I think I'm, you know, speaking for tankers. One challenge we have is that we're, you know, an advanced taxi service, right? And it would help if the guys who charter the taxi had any interest in reducing emissions. And this is the problem. This is another paradox. So, the boardroom decision of net zero by 2050 by the major oil companies has not in any way changed how they behave in the freight market. So they're not willing to pay one single cent for a lower emitting ship unless it's in relation to EU ETS, because there is actually a saving. So I think kind of, you know, we can do all we want, but unless kind of our customers are there also to invest in this. And it's, you know, I think that they can't really do the investment either because they're not able to put that cost down to the consumer. So the guy filling up his petrol tank in whatever country, he's not willing to pay 3 cents more per liter or gallon for cleaner freight. So I think kind of, and their loss is absolutely correct, you know, kind of, you know, it doesn't really, the world doesn't really work like that. So, but it's not all hopeless. You know, we in general, and I think that goes probably for all here, we don't necessarily like tax, but the EU ETS scheme has actually worked by way of you know, you add the surcharge to relate it to your emission, and you actually are able to pass it on, and you do see a trend of more energy efficient vessels trading in and out of Europe. So you know, it's a way, gradual way to change it. You know, on the earnings side, I'm, you know, just looking at the average age of the fleet and the lack of new orders, particularly so for tankers, I think that's going to sort itself out. I don't think there's any scenario, nobody has that scenario really, that oil demand is going to fall off a cliff anytime soon. So this will happen. But whether if the investment then is going to increase in decarbonization or dividends to shareholders, I'm not too sure.
Yes, sir?
Yeah, no, I think there is maybe one tiny bit little exemption to the rule we just discussed, and that is that you will, as we see, energy for vessels will increase going forward. You said EU ETS has already, you know, increased the average price of energy by default. We have new IMO regulations, so the industry over the next 5-10 years will pay more for fuel, and that will reflect down to earnings on vessels. So I think for sure there will be an even better correlation between your earnings on your vessel and your footprint, because it's basically fuel, right? And fuel consumption and cost. But just to shed a hope of light in our industry, actually, and it's possible, Lars, to get customers to pay, and we've been doing that. 3 years ago, we said, no customers wanted, nobody wanted, forget it, nobody's going to pay anything. And then we just started, create a product. Have you made a product, by the way? Low-carbon fuel product? Low-carbon freight, yeah? We did that, and we went out to our customers, and we were slowly able to get some of them to start moving, small and tiny. Last year, we were able to get more than 10% of our fuel consumption were biofuel blends paid for by customers. This year, we're going to pass 20%. Now, we have told our customers that everybody who wants to do business with us need to use our multi-fuel buff, i.e., we will get to zero in 2040, and you will pay gradually more and more and more for it. And they are, more or less, all of them accepting it. Started in Northern Europe. I mean, you can imagine we do business with the Volvos of the world. Then Asia is coming after. The only slowness we see now is actually in the US. And to that, so I think you had a good point, Lars, in terms of decarbonization. Is the consumer willing to pay 3 cents more for the gallon? Not if it's voluntary, but if you're able to orchestrate that value chain, they wouldn't even notice, right? So I think there's one last element I'd like to add on decarbonization shipping, is that we tend to say that we're a hard-to-abate industry. That's bullshit. We know exactly what to do. And it's not going to be expensive. We're hard to orchestrate. How do we orchestrate that we can buy the fuel, our customers pay for it, and their customers pay for it, and they pay for it, so we can move it to the consumer, and then it's not going to be ignored. You said 3 cents. We could add a couple of $100 on the car, and it can be moved, you know, without emissions to the end consumer. That's not the problem. The problem is, how do we orchestrate that? And that's why regulations, but also companies like ourselves, we need to drive that change. Find those coalition of the willing. Don't give up. There's maybe one out there, Lars. Maybe one. Start with that.
Ernst, do you have any comments to...
I think you asked about if earnings are improving. I think that freight will be more expensive because it costs money. But I agree that when we create a level playing field, we should not be afraid of that cost. And the end consumers can afford the cost. I think the can of Coke will go up by 0.0 cent or something. So it is absolutely possible also from an economic point of view to reach a net zero in 2050. But on the way there, freight will become more expensive. And if you have technology or trading efficiency, there will be ample opportunities to gain more profit from that higher earning. So if you're smart and strategic and the timing on your investments, which could fail, are good, there are opportunities to get greater earnings from a higher level of rates.
Thank you. We often focus on the big headlines. I think everybody said that, you know, you're afraid of what's going on every time there's some big news or new things happening in the world. And some of the big headlines right now for shipping, or has been for some time, is decarbonization, regulations, and also the recent geopolitical situation. But I'm sure, you know, you are at the heart of a lot of things. So I'm sure that there's a lot more on your daily plate than only the big headlines. So are there any undiscussed or perhaps neglected subjects that deserves attention seen from your side that you would like to highlight now? Maybe start with, well, start with you, Lars, then.
Yeah,
you've already.
There's one thing that I'm destined on, or you know, determined on mentioning every time I'm at the public stage in a shipping kind of setting, and that is you know, ship recycling. We have a huge problem ahead of us. And I'm you know, I'm not going to say I'm a great kind of fortune teller or whatever it's called, but one thing is for sure: with this aging fleet we have maybe particularly in the tanker market, we're going to have graveyards of floating environmental bombs out there, and this is, you know, IMO was mentioned earlier on. There is an inherent slowness in their system. But, you know, if we can put this on agenda, that, you know, this is can be a big environmental problem. And it probably already is. With the ghost ships have been kind of portrayed in Bloomberg and other media. This is a serious problem for the shipping industry, although more specifically to tankers.
Ibrahim, any thoughts from your side?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. It's mainly, I would say, the quality of the crew on board in terms of their, of course, their capability, as well as the, I would consider maybe the digital illiteracy of the crew. Nowadays, we do have ships that are highly sophisticated ships. Digitalization is on the top of every ship owner's agenda. Yet, we don't have the right, maybe the most capable crew and officers to basically deal with these challenges. It is important maybe for us to start investing a lot in our crew, making sure that the crew are put as the top priority, because we can have the most sophisticated ship, the top of the range, we can pay millions and hundreds of millions, but if you don't have the right operator, then that investment is gone. This is one thing. The other thing I would look at, it's maybe the port and terminals inefficiencies, because today we have ships that are, in terms of technology, being advanced. A lot of investment is being put into advancing these ships, making them the most and highly technology ships. But yet, terminals and ports are not keeping the same pace. So there is a gap between the ships, or the modern ships, if I may say, the digitalization on ships, and the least investment in the port and terminals. And I know maybe there's, of course, there's capital injection is required. And the return on investment when it comes to port and terminal is not as fast as it is when you buy a ship. Yet, we have to close that gap between these two major players in the shipping industry.
Thank you. John, do you have any reflections not making the big headlines, but that still may keep you up at night?
Well, I was just thinking about hybrid ships, that it's something that we should be, we are looking at least. And I think that more and more we'll be seeing that. That's one thing. And the second thing is that there is technology out there that produces carbon neutral fuels. And it's not, you know, from waste or from other sources or e-fuels. So this technology is coming, and it's going to come in a few years, and it's going to be available to shipping. So that will help immensely in the decarbonization and sustainability of shipping as such. So before we start talking about, you know, nuclear and things like that, which are, you know, 10 years ahead at least, but I think there is a lot more things that can be done and will be done and are available. We are also involved with MIT and some studies that they have done, which are quite impressive. So there is things that are happening that could improve the, you know, the decarbonization of shipping and also the sustainability of shipping. So that's what I want to say.
Yeah, thank you. Ernst, anything keeping you up at night besides the big headlines, or maybe you sleep well regardless?
Maybe some sweet dreams too. I mean, artificial intelligence is I think we are starting to comprehend what it can mean. But I think it's a interesting thought that if that revolution happened 10 years ago, ships could not participate. Because ships has in general been outside the internet until very recently. But now there is no excuse. It's an affordable system with global coverage. So we have connected ships that are facing the AI revolution in the same way as everything else. I think that's a new thing, and then we can start to use our imagination to what that can do with the asset which is the central everything we discuss, being part of the production system, so to say. So that will be very interesting to watch.
Thank you. Lasse, any thoughts?
Yeah, and I'll build on that. I totally agree with Lars, though, on the scrapping. We have, I mean, remember that a huge majority of the fleet we see today was ordered during the boom in 26, 7, 8 and delivered after. And those are coming to end of life soon. And there's nowhere near sufficient facilities, you know, proper facilities to take care of this process. But then building on Ernst's point, I think even with the AI, but also beyond that, I think the area that we have not really seen big issues in shipping yet, and they will come, we have just not seen it yet, that's on cybersecurity hitting on board and inside the vessels. Largely because we've been solving that by keeping key systems offline. Now we're getting more and more systems offline, and if you look in our company, we're now also putting critical systems online because we need it to utilize this technology, and that makes us extremely vulnerable. So we had done a good job in terms of, not good job, but at least focused a lot on IT. How do you make sure they don't hack our emails and stuff? But we have far from done enough on protecting our operational technology on the vessels. And this is an area that at least I think a lot of, and I think we as an industry need to focus more on.
Thank you for that, and thank you all. I think we will wrap it up, and I would like to thank you all for sharing, and I think you pointed that out in the beginning, by sharing, collaborating, and also discussing these items. I think it's highlights different views and different ways of how we are operating. I think adaptability is a word that I've picked here, and I think that the being a ship owner will still be challenging, but also quite exciting moving forward. So thank you for sharing your thoughts today.